25 minutes past 7, Monday night's arena. It's impossible, I think, to come up with a more lauded US author right now than Ben Lerner. He's published 2 auto-fictional novels, Leaving the Atocha Station and 1004, and 4 poetry collections, all well received. He's won the Albright, he's won several fellowships, including the Fulbright and the MacArthur Foundation. The Topeka School is his 3rd novel, and given that Lerner himself was born in Topeka, Kansas in 1979, it's probably reasonable to assume that he's mining his own life again to some degree. Peter Murphy has been reading it for us, and he's with me in studio now. You know, sometimes when I hear this term autofiction, kind of my skin starts to crawl. I don't know about you, Peter. Was that your initial reaction when you heard that was the direction you were heading with this novel?
Up until about a year ago, I used to bring on the worst heartburn. but once you... I think I actively avoided Ben Lerner for years.
For that very, because that was what he had treated in the previous 2 novels in particular. Not so much his own story.
Not so much the auto-fictional stuff, because I like Nausgaard and I like, and we've discussed this on the program before. All auto-fiction is what people have done for years, from Anna Aenin to Henry Miller to, you know, Celine to Kerouac, whomever, is simply to... Mailer was the king of it. It was simply to mine one's own life and to write about oneself as though they were a fictional character. Rob Dahl's new book, Threshold, does it.
All fiction is autobiographical, is what will be told.
To some degree. It's, this is Ben Lerner's first novel written in the 3rd person, is the main difference. But I would have avoided him mostly because I have an irrational and unfair prejudice against MFA program approved grand-stamped upper middle class school of Brooklyn.
This is his background?
Brooklyn, right. Well, he's from Kansas, but he moved to Brooklyn. But it's not so much that, and these are all great writers, but one can have too much of a good thing, in that if this is the dominant male and female form of fiction happening at the moment, where are the working class voices, where are the minority voices, and the simple answer to that is, you need to be supported in order to write fiction these days.
And, you know, if you had to come up with lists of, you know, the sort of writers that are in that school of, you know, well-heeled, come through the well-worn MFA program, are there those that really jump to mind as these are the authors we've been encouraged to praise and to laud?
Well, I suppose it goes from the 90s school of David Eggers and David Foster Wallace up to... Actually, there's some quite stars from South America and African American circles, like we spoke about Colson Whitehead and Juno Diaz and Casey Gerald. So it's not strictly along race lines, but it is very much a bias towards university-educated voices. Really?
Right, yeah.
So that is the school of which, just to give some background, that's why I would have been resistant to a Ben Lerner book to start with.
So in the Topeka School, this is a prequel to the subsequent 2 novels, but we are dealing with a character that has been there all along, this young poet. Give us a sense of Adam Gordon, a sense of who he is and where he fits in. He's very like Lerner himself.
He's the author proxy. And if you delve in any way into Lerner's family background, Adam Gordon is a debating prodigy and an aspiring poet in his last year in high school. The novel takes place over his last year in high school with flashbacks. And there are 2, I wouldn't call them supporting characters. They do have very significant parts to play in the novel, which is his mother, Jane, a successful writer, still dealing with the suppressed memory of familial sexual abuse. And his father, Jonathan, a psychoanalyst, struggling with the realities of fidelity and married life and being married to a woman who is more successful and more famous than he is. He's very much the father figure is the weaker character in the story. And there's a 4th character called Darren Eberhardt, who's an autistic boy who, through a single act of violence, provides what sort of narrative traction there is in the book. Which is interesting because he's got by far the shortest sections in the book, and they're in italics and they sort of are interludes between each main chapter. But they are very, very well written. And
yeah, in fact, I think that's the sections around Darren and the part of the story that deals with Darren was the part of the book I think that worked amongst the best sections for you.
It's extremely insightful writing, and I'll get to it in a minute as to why I think this is a really great book, and he's a great writer. But there are two sides to the book. There's brain and heart. The brain side is to do with debating, it's to do with university life, it's to do with psychoanalysis, it's to do with the progressive community that Adam's parents belong to. The heart is his mother's story in the family, and Darren specifically, the class dynamics and the peer dynamics of how an autistic boy fits or doesn't fit into his peer group. And what's really chilling and really effective in this book is that for years up until he's 14 or 15, this kid Darren is naturally enough an outsider. He's, you know, tolerated, or he's invited along to parties only because the parents insist that he's included and invited along to parties. Something happens then the final year of high school where the boys and what's come to be known as toxic masculinity is a huge
topic,
theme, running through this book. So they start to treat Darren differently. They start to treat him as a sort of a mascot, and they invite him along to keg parties, and they encourage him to try it on with girls, and they encourage him to, you know, be cool and dress cool, and their attitude towards him changes, but you're never quite sure. There's this queasy sense of, are they mocking him? Or are they including him? And there's a sense almost of that awful, nauseated sense that you get in of mice and men, that this thing is not going to end well. And so it proves. There's one single act of violence that is announced at the beginning of the book and then drags the reader all the way through it to find out how it happens or what the end result of it is.
But so it sounds essentially as if, you know, given what happens to Darren and that becoming involved with this, you know, what sounds like a frat house type almost situation with the Adam Gordon, the fictional poet here, are we looking at white male privilege in the case of the young men that he's involved with? And are we looking at basically Ben Lerner talking to us about toxic masculinity and the crisis of masculinity? And is he saying anything new?
It's interesting. He's quite subtle about it. It only really settles in after reading the book how strong that undercurrent runs through it is. The majority of the book you feel is his relationship with his girlfriend, his relationship with his mother and father, and their relationships with their parents, and very much a sort of post-boomer, you know, 1990s. It's set in 1997. Tupac is the soundtrack. Everybody wears Timberland boots and baggy, you know. But feeding into that is, you do start to realize afterwards that, okay, it's a study of I wouldn't say masculinity, but macho behavior, sort of alpha male frat house stuff. But what's interesting is he looks at it also from the geeky or the dweeby point of view. So Adam himself is a brilliant debating contestant. So it examines the techniques that Adam uses in debating, one of which is called the spread, which is to lay out your arguments so quickly and so rapidly and almost nonsensically as to confuse the opponent. And the more we read about these techniques, the more we realize that these debating gladiators basically grew up, went to the White House and became political movers 20 years later. And that this is the form of discourse for 21st century politics.
So it's a very political novel in that respect.
It's quite political in that, you know, if you say this stuff fast enough, nobody's going to call you on it. And you can appear to win an argument while spouting utterly nonsensical drivel. So there's the sort of cerebral, toxicity of the behavior. And then there's the more sort of traditional, if you like, you know, beer keg drinking. There's some really incisive stuff where Lerner describes how a couple of boys, when they're starting to shape up to fight, will start throwing gangster signs at each other, which in middle-class suburban white boys throwing gangster shapes at each other is ludicrous, and yet they take it deadly seriously. And then there's other elements of his mother has written a quite a popular kind of self-help book for women, and she gets all these kind of anonymous hate phone calls from male callers, and it almost precludes a sort of Me Too online trolling Twitter sphere phenomenon.
Now, you avoided Ben Lerner up until now. Now you've read him. Is there enough in this book to send you back to others of his writings? And are you recommending the Topeka School?
I do recommend the Topeka School. Again, almost against it, reminds me the architecture of it is it's, it reminds me of two very different books. Mm. It reminds me of Infinite Jest by David Foster Wallace, which no American writer would thank anybody for the comparison to, but it does have that same combination of heart and brain and vaulting kind of intelligence and brilliant psychological insight. And the architecture of it is kind of like The Sound and the Fury by Faulkner. It's a really great book.
All right, Peter Murphy there speaking to us about The Topeka School by Ben Lerner, which is published by Grant.